Hi everyone, thanks for coming. I'm Steve Rosenzweig. I'm going to be talking about some recent shifts in how dryland farmers are managing their crop rotations. I'm going to try to look at the economic and environmental implications from a holistic systems level standpoint. So I'm going to be focusing on this region, the semi-arid high plains, which includes Colorado, Kansas, Nebraska. This region has some of the greatest day-to-day and year-to-year variability in climate than almost any other region in the country. And so it's really dry, and the weather's unpredictable, which makes it really hard to be a farmer, especially for dryland farmers who, by definition, have no irrigation. And so historically, to cope with this risk, the dominant cropping system in this region is wheat summer fallow, where farmers will grow wheat for 10 months, basically wheat for 1 year, and then they'll fallow the next year. So during this fallow period, they're controlling herbicides or controlling weeds through herbicides or tillage, and the purpose is so that the soil can collect enough water that it stabilizes wheat yields from year to year. But it's a really inefficient use of the region's most precious resource, which is water. It only stores about 25% of the precipitation that falls during this period. And so more recently, farmers, no-till has enabled farmers to intensify their cropping systems, meaning that they're replacing these bare fallow periods with crops. So it's reduced their reliance on summer fallow. And so instead of one crop every 2 years, like the wheat fallow system, some farmers are growing two crops every 3 years or three crops every 4 years, and that's a mid-intensity system. Or some farmers are growing a crop every single year, and they're eliminating summer fallow completely. And so this is called continuous cropping. And they're achieving this through greater diversity of their cropping systems. So they're rotating different crops with wheat, like corn, sorghum, sunflowers, millet, and peas. And so we use the CropLens data layer to quantify regional shifts in cropping patterns over time. And we see that about 500,000 hectares have intensified in the high plains just since 2008. So you can see, you know, historically, this system was, you know, universally adopted after the Dust Bowl. But we can finally see that, you know, now these mid-intensity and continuous systems, these are becoming the more dominant cropping systems by land area. And this is happening all around the world. This isn't just in the high plains. So it's important to see what effect this is having. And so kind of the charge for this section was to look at the effects of these four soil health principles: reduce disturbance, maximize diversity, keep a living root in the ground, and keep the soil covered. And cropping system intensification is really concerned with these two in particular. And so we're going to be focusing on all no-till farmers, so everyone's already reduced soil disturbance. But we're going to be looking at the effect of these two principles in dryland systems. And so we wanted to look at this from a holistic standpoint, which we're going to define here as the intersection of soil health, including physical, chemical, and biological characteristics, input use, in particular fertilizer and herbicides, and crop yields. And ultimately, we want to understand what the effects are on profitability. So we looked at 96 dryland no-till fields, which represent working farms and long-term experiment stations in eastern Colorado and Nebraska. And so there's this climatic gradient here that gets hotter and drier as you go south, so there's a higher potential evapotranspiration. And so we have our three levels of cropping system intensity here. So there's continuous systems, mid-intensity, and wheat fallow. And this is a balanced design, so there's no east-to-west or north-south bias in where these cropping systems are located. And we also have some 30-year CRP. These are perennial grassland sites that we've included for comparison. And the first question we asked is, what are the effects of cropping system intensification on soil organic carbon, aggregation, and microbial communities? So I'm going to take some time on this graph because most of the graphs look like this. So down here are cropping system intensities, wheat fallow, mid-intensity, and continuous. We have our perennial grasslands here. And so we made these models of a response variable, in this case carbon, versus cropping system intensity and all other significant covariates like potential evapotranspiration, clay content, any environmental or management factors that were significant. And we are accounting for those other covariates. So we're just accounting for those covariates, what's the effect of cropping system intensity. We see that organic carbon is 17% greater in these continuous systems relative to wheat fallow down to 10 centimeters and about 12% greater down to 20 centimeters. Well, we can see there's no significant difference between these mid-intensity and wheat fallow systems, so it's this incremental effect. We also saw that wet aggregate stability was 2 times greater in continuous soils than wheat fallow. This is down to 10 centimeters, although you can see that, you know, these annualized cropping systems, they have nothing compared to the perennial roots in terms of stabilizing aggregates. We also looked at PLFA concentrations as an indicator of biomass, and so we see that fungal biomass is 3 times greater in continuous than wheat fallow systems. And we also saw greater overall microbial biomass and higher fungi to bacteria ratios in these continuous systems. And this is helping to explain the aggregation data. The fungi were really highly related to the aggregate stability in these soils. And so the takeaway from this section is that cropping system intensification can increase carbon, aggregate stability, and fungal and total microbial biomass relative to wheat fallow. But it was mostly in this incremental approach, effect. So mid-intensity wasn't really significantly different from wheat fallow. And so it is really continuous cropping that's having the highest benefit. Next, we looked at what are the effects of intensification on total grain production, input use, and profitability. So this is a graph of annualized grain yield, which is the total grain yield for every crop in the rotation from 2010 to 2015, which is a 6-year period, divided by 6. And we can see that these intensified systems are achieving greater overall grain yield relative to wheat fallow. And we also were interested in what the effect of continuous cropping is on wheat yields. So when you replace that summer fallow period before wheat with a crop, that wheat crop is starting out with less moisture, so we'd expect its yield to be lower. And that's what we're seeing. These are wheat yields that had a crop the preceding year, and they're about 29% lower than wheat yields that had a fallow year beforehand. But you can see that these continuous farmers are more than making up for it with the yield from their other crops. We also looked at herbicide use. So we have 3 different herbicides here, glyphosate, 2,4-D, and dicamba. These are overwhelmingly the most common herbicides in this kind of system. And we can see that that herbicide use is greatly reduced by continuous farmers relative to wheat fallow, and mid-intensity farmers too. So continuous farmers are using about half the amount of glyphosate as wheat fallow, about 80% less 2,4-D, and about 70% less dicamba. And this is because these fallow periods are so management intensive. And for these no-till farmers that don't do tillage, they have to spray herbicides to control these weeds. And when there's no crop out there competing with those weeds, it takes a lot more chemical to control. And I'm about to show fertilizer use data, and what we found is really surprising, because what we'd expect is that, you know, these intensified systems are growing more crops, they're achieving greater overall production, and so we'd expect higher fertilizer use. Some studies have estimated that going from a wheat fallow system to a wheat corn fallow system, for example, would increase your nitrogen requirement by 44%. And what we found is that while mid-intensity farmers are applying the most nitrogen on an annualized basis, continuous farmers are applying about the same amounts of nitrogen and phosphorus as wheat fallow farmers. And this is surprising. We expected this to be one of the big trade-offs of continuous cropping. And so we're going to talk about why this might be the case, why continuous farmers are applying the same amount of fertilizer in a second. But first, I want to show this graph, which is annualized net operating income. And so basically what we're seeing is that greater crop production with fewer inputs in these intensified systems are making these farmers more profitable. But going back to this question, how are continuous farmers able to grow more crops with the same amount of fertilizer? And we have 2 possible explanations for this. One is that continuous soils are making more nitrogen available for plants. So this is total nitrogen here. And just like these continuous soils are accruing carbon, they're also accruing nitrogen. And this is potentially mineralizable nitrogen. And so what this is showing is that these continuous soils are building reservoirs of plant available nitrogen. And the second thing is the effect of cropping system intensification on arbuscular mycorrhizal fungi. And so these fungi live inside of and grow out of roots, and they help plants take up nutrients, especially immobile nutrients like phosphorus. And we'd expect that the colonization of, so this is colonization of wheat crops in the rotations. And so what we'd expect is that colonization would be lower when there's a summer fallow period before it, because these fungi require a plant host to survive. So when you have a long period without any growing plants, their populations tend to die off in the soil. That's kind of what Michael showed before in the previous talk. And so we see that colonization of wheat crops is about 3 times greater in these continuous soils. And it's also higher in these mid-intensity systems because the fallow period is actually a little bit shorter. And we also took the tops of the plants and looked at phosphorus concentration. And we see that for plants that had, so this is above ground biomass phosphorus concentration, this is colonization. And we can see that the crops that had more AMF living in them, they had higher phosphorus concentrations. So this is potentially leading to greater plant phosphorus uptake. So the takeaway is that continuous cropping enables farmers to grow more crops using fewer chemical inputs, which is leading to greater profitability and a reduced environmental footprint relative to wheat fallow. And so the original question was to look at if these two principles hold up in dry land systems. Kind of the prevailing narrative is that it's too dry to do some of these things. But these data suggest that these principles do hold up in our dry land systems. And so in conclusion, cropping system intensification, and especially continuous cropping, has the potential to improve environmental and economic outcomes of dryland agriculture by building carbon and improving soil structure, by enhancing nutrient supply and capacity, and by increasing overall crop production while reducing dependence on fertilizers and herbicides, which is leading to greater incomes and less environmental harm. And so there's lots of people to thank for this work, and especially the farmers who spend hours digging up old records to help me find this data. So, thanks.
Yeah, plenty of time for questions.
Okay.
So, with respect to fertilizer input, that's a management decision.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm just wondering if you guys were able to ask the growers what was different and what made them change their fertilizer input.
Yeah, so we also did a whole sociological analysis. So we talked to each of these farmers in depth about all these decisions. And actually, when you look at these continuous farmers, they totally subscribe to this broader soil health movement. They believe that investing in their soil health is going to enable them to reduce their fertilizer inputs. And they also have this perception that adding fertilizers is going to actually degrade their long-term ability of their soil to supply nutrients. So they're deliberately cutting back on these inputs, but it's also a profitability strategy. So input reduction, because we're seeing the cost of inputs go up over time, over the past several decades, the cost of inputs has been going up. Reducing inputs is now becoming a more viable profitability strategy than simply just maximizing yield. Yep.
So that's really exciting work, and I'm all about living roots, but I'm also wondering about causality. I mean, couldn't it be that farmers have better soil organics so that then they say, okay, I'm going to go continuous? How do you cope with that?
Right, so pretty much every farmer in the study started out as wheat fallow at some point. For the wheat fallow farmers that we talked to, they only do wheat fallow, and they've only done wheat fallow. Like mid-intensity farmers, they only do mid-intensity. So it's not like they're picking and choosing which fields they're going to do this on based on, how good their soils were to begin with. So it really is the result of the producer's management decisions and not necessarily what the condition of this soil to start with. Yeah.
So the point of fallow is to increase soil water content, so how do they manage having continuous cropping without extra water and
So it is riskier, and like we saw there, their wheat yields are lower. I guess it's just their tolerance for risk is different. They do grow crops every single year. Some years it fails, and they can collect crop insurance, which helps. But it is really about their tolerance for risk, and continuous farmers just are able to cope with that, I guess.
I'll point out that you mentioned you only save 25% of the water you receive in a fallow year.
Right.
So it's really not a question.
Mm-hmm.
You just utilize the water there.
Right. And it is they're trying to maximize the efficiency of water use. Yep.
How long have some of these practices been in place? And in a dry land system, how long does it take to actually see these benefits?
That's a good question. So on average, these systems have been in these rotations, like continuous rotations, on average 20 years for this study. Some fields were as low as 5 years, some were 30, but we used number of years in rotation as a covariate, and it didn't really make any difference. It wasn't a significant covariate. And also the number of years in no-till we recorded too, and that wasn't significant either as a covariate. Yep.
Were you measuring sort of lead and phosphorus levels, and did it drop over the 30 years or whatever the length of the study was, and the continuous cropping system?
Yeah, so we did measure like soil phosphorus. There wasn't any significant difference between the different cropping systems. So, I mean, are you asking like if they're mining their soil phosphorus potentially?
Yeah, because the phosphorus levels are too high in most ag soils because of the years that we've added too much phosphorus, and I'm wondering if they're dropping it at all. I'm worried about the phosphorus runoff to the streams and water bodies. So the continuous cropping is not showing reductions in phosphorus levels.
No, yeah, they're assuming they stayed at this, they started out at the same level, then it doesn't seem that they are, because if you just look at soil phosphorus, they're pretty similar between each of the cropping system intensities. Any other questions?
Did you notice a difference across the latitudinal gradient or the dryness gradient, or was it pretty much consistent?
Yeah, so for things like AMF colonization, this was strongly related to potential evapotranspiration. So as you get hotter and drier, you're just going to have less colonization. By the time you're actually way down here, there's it's just a marginal benefit of continuous cropping, or in some fields it's not really a difference at all. Just because these plants are just shorter, they're pumping out less carbon. And it's just too dry, I guess. But actually, surprisingly, for a lot of the soil properties, carbon is it was related to PET as well, but there's no interaction between PET and cropping system intensity. So meaning that even when you're at these southernmost sites, there still is an intensity benefit, but just overall, the carbon levels are lower. Yep.
Did you look at intensifying the rotations even further with cover crops, or is that not done?
No, so that's on another study we're doing on-farm research with farmers to try to integrate cover crops into these systems, but it's so dry that it's really hard to make it work economically, so we're looking at integrating livestock and using those cover crops as more of a forage mixture. And that's one way we're going to try to diversify these systems even further, is by having these diverse forage mixes and integrating livestock, as a rotational component with these other crops. Yeah?
Are any of these farmers, especially to the south, inoculating their soils with AM fungal species that are doing better in drier conditions than the Desertifolia species that they have? Are they relying on sort of repopulation by native populations?
So all these fields that we looked at, there's no inoculum, but there are a couple farmers up here that are doing that on other fields. They are inoculating. And actually, I did look at one of those fields just kind of for my own benefit. And they had, whereas we're seeing colonization levels around like 25, that one field had colonization levels about 40-45%. But it's still kind of a fringe sort of thing.
All right.
Thanks.